With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Monday, the 18th of March, 2024, and I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, I've just caught up with Johnny Vedmore about his new TNT show in the first hour of today's Freeman Report. I also caught up with Dr. Mark Richards to discuss his book titled Nobody Wants You Healthy, Achieving Better Health by Avoiding the Corruptions in Modern Medical Science. Two great conversations. If you want to listen back to the first hour of the show, it'll be uploaded in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on episodes. There you'll be able to watch and listen back to all of my previous shows here on TNT. Right, now before I talk about the final hour of the show, I'm sure that you've all noticed that the timing of my show today is slightly different. For the next 2 weeks, the Freeman Report will go out from 12 p.m. midday to 1 o'clock UK, sorry, to 2 o'clock UK time to accommodate a few tweaks to the schedule as we welcome a new host to the station. However, after the clocks go forward, my show will move to 1 till 3, as it was last week. The reason for this second change of timing is when the clocks go back, the times in the UK change, because Queensland, believe it or not, in Australia, where TNT is based, voted back in 1992 to scrap daylight saving, which means when the clocks change here, they don't change in Queensland, and it means all of the show times here change. They go forward by 1 hour in a couple of weeks' time. So my show long term will be 1 till 3 o'clock. In terms of new hosts, as discussed in the past hour, investigative journalist Johnny Vedmore will be joining TNT this week from 4 till 6, which will turn into 5 till 7 in a couple of weeks. I think we're looking at him starting on Wednesday or Thursday this week. So something to look forward to there. I think Johnny's work is absolutely fantastic. It's certainly something that will add a new dimension to TNT. All of his in-depth research on political figures, on Klaus Schwab, but also people that were going to be up for election later this year. I'm really looking forward to his research on them about, you know, who are they? Who are these people that are standing for election? What are their family links, their business connections, and all of the other stuff like this? Anyway, I highly recommend tuning in to Johnny's first show. I think it's going to be on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, but I'm sure that'll be announced on X. It's going to be Wednesday or Thursday, so I'll definitely be tuning in. So I highly recommend you do the same. Right, okay, so coming up in the next hour, I'll be chatting with New York Times bestselling author and film producer Larry Schwekart and outreach director Sophia Loren. Larry graduated from Arizona State University with a BA in political science, then went on the road with several different rock bands, bit of a change there, before going back into academia and getting a PhD from the University of California. He is the co-author of the New York Times number one bestseller, A Patriot's History of the United States, which is now in its 31st printing with over 500,000 copies in print. Patriot's History remains the best-selling homeschool history textbook in America and is featured in numerous college courses. However, it is his later book that I'm interested in, which is titled A Patriot's History of Globalism, which explores the history and attempts at establishing a one world government. In the book, Larry paints a picture of entities like the WHO and WEF, which he says is in decline, both these organizations. So I'll be asking him all about that in just a moment. After speaking with Larry, I'll be joined with Outreach Director Sophia Loray to talk about the latest news from the States in terms of women's sport and the fight to keep men out of women's sport. We'll also be discussing the Parents Not Partisan Summit that took part in the US last week. Right. Changing the subject now, what are you doing on the 3rd, 4th and 5th of May? Because I've got two tickets to give away for the Weekend Truth Festival in Workington, Cumbria. Kate Shamarani, Katie Hopkins, Matt Letizia and a whole host of other guests, speakers will be performing at the festival, which is being organised by the Buxton Freedom Hub. All you need to do to win a pair of tickets totally free of charge is complete the following three tasks. Head over to the X platform, follow at W Truth Festivals, that's at W Truth Festival, go and follow that account. Share the post pinned at the top of the account that contains the festival flyer and leave a comment underneath saying, I want some tickets. We'll be picking the winner at random this Wednesday. So to recap, go and follow at W Truth Festival, share the post that's pinned to the top of the account and leave a comment underneath saying, I want some tickets. If you want to get in touch about anything on the show, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, as always, head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, Basil.
Good afternoon, James. Nice to see you again. And hello to yes. our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Fantastic. Talking about festivals, there's quite a few speaking festivals going on this year. I think there's two in May. Obviously, I've just talked about the Truth Festival there. Are you planning to get out and go camping this year, Basil?
If I'm invited somewhere, James, if anybody out there, any festival organisers would like to know what I've got to say about things, then I'd be delighted to go along. I must admit, the festival you just referenced in early May is the first one I've ever heard of in Workington, Cumbria. Is that a camping event or is that in the town of Workington?
Yeah, no, it's a camping event. So they've got a beautiful campsite, apparently. And we, like I said, we've got some great speakers. Maybe I'll have to pick you up on my motorbike, Basil. You can come on the back.
It's a long way to go on a motorbike.
It certainly is,
Not sure my heart would take it, James. Obviously, Workington on the edge of the Lake District. So
that's right,
I'm sure they've got a lovely spot up there. Hopefully the weather will be kind at the beginning of May. It could be anything from baking hot to a blizzard, quite frankly.
Yeah, although the last several years, we've always had a great spring. I mean, look at 2020, the year of the lockdown started. Absolutely fantastic summer. Well, until summer actually came, that was. The last few years, it's actually the summer months where we've seen a lot of the rain and drizzle. But fingers crossed, May should be a real good one. Anyway, Basil, we're digressing. What stories have you got for us today?
Well, it's our solemn duty, James, to report on events in Gaza and the Middle East, both conditions on the ground and the latest with the political situation. First of all, a report has been issued today by the UN-backed Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, which says that famine is imminent in northern Gaza and that 1.1 million people, roughly half the population, are facing catastrophic food supply conditions. Rose Caldwell, CEO of Plan International, an NGO that works to advance children's rights, issued the following statement. She said, after months of unimaginable trauma and indiscriminate bombing, the children of Gaza are now facing the horror of starvation and the threat of imminent famine. This entirely man-made catastrophe should be a source of shame for the international community. There can be no excuses. Preventing access to humanitarian aid is a clear violation of international humanitarian law. The starvation of civilians as a method of warfare is illegal and immoral. To put it mildly, in response, Israeli government spokesperson Ilon Levy, responding to comments particularly from European diplomatic chief Josep Borrell, effectively the EU's foreign minister, who said that the famine is indeed man-made, Levy on social media has said that, and I quote, Israel is facilitating the delivery of unlimited quantities of aid by air, land and sea. I would say that Mr. Levy is lying, James.
I find it quite shocking, actually, Basil, that all of the talk here in the UK is being very much directed towards these Palestinian marches every Saturday, you know, labelling them as hate. I mean, we've even had politicians in the Conservative Party calling them hate marches. I find that, like, it's odd, isn't it? How we're having that debate, and yet this is going on in the background, and our politicians do not seem to be acknowledging what is going on. It's quite shocking, isn't it?
It's shocking and disgraceful, but it's the continuation of a long pattern. For years before October the 7th, we had the entirely fabricated Labour anti-Semitism crisis. Yeah. Which was based on absolutely nothing at all, but which succeeded in taking up all the oxygen in the room around the issue of the Middle East with this phony nonsense when, you know, at the same time, international human rights organizations like Amnesty and B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, were officially designating Israel to be an apartheid state. I thought that when that happened, then we would see a sea change in British foreign policy. Israel is indeed an apartheid state, and once designated so by bodies with widely respected reputations, we hoped that would mark a change. It didn't. Instead, we saw all this other garbage about a non-existing anti-Semitism crisis in the Labour Party. And that's a continuation of this, really. These entirely fabricated nonsense about it being dangerous for Jewish people to go to central London when the marches are on, when in fact there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people marching as part of the Jewish bloc, proudly holding up signs saying, not in my name, another Jew against genocide, etc. So this is specious nonsense. It's also very sinister. And as you rightly say, it takes attention away from the real issue, which is the ongoing genocide. Also this morning, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency chief, Philip Lazzarini, has said he intended to go to Rafah and to enter the Gaza Strip via the crossing there, where hundreds of trucks with aid are being prevented from entering Gaza. But he says he's been told that his entry is denied by the Israeli authorities. What on earth gives the Israelis the right to deny senior UN officials permission to enter Gaza? The only explanation is that they don't want people like Lazzarini to see just how horrific the situation on the ground is there.
And what are you hearing about, if we zoom out a little bit, you know, we obviously had the attacks in October. There were some people that were saying, I think the whole thing is quite suspicious how that came about, because, you know, it is one of the most protected security walls in the world. And then suddenly these, you know, flimsy paragliders were able to fly over there. Anyway, putting all of that aside, after that happened, we then heard stories about these oil and gas fields off of Gaza, the fact that the licenses are coming up, the fact that Israel wants to build a new canal, presumably to ferry a lot of that gas and oil to Europe. Have we heard anything more about any of that yet?
Well, I think until there's a permanent ceasefire and then negotiations begin on a permanent settlement in the Middle East, which is the real cause of the problems, John F. Kennedy wanted to impose permanent borders on Israel, and we all know what happened to him. A lot of Israeli politicians are quite openly saying that All the Palestinians should be expelled in the greatest act of ethnic cleansing this century, another war crime, and that Israel should take possession of Gaza. That isn't going to happen. We're still seeing politicians in Europe and the United States talking about the two-state solution. All the while, in both Gaza and the West Bank, more and more Palestinian territory is being stolen. At the moment, the situation is balanced on a knife edge, with Netanyahu threatening to massacre more civilians in Rafah unless Hamas completely capitulates to his demands. And the stakes are getting higher and higher. Egypt's foreign minister, Sameh Shoukry, has said today that Washington, rather than just making bland statements, needs to make it clear to Israel what the consequences of a military push on Rafah would be. He said, it's up to the international community in the United States, who have indicated their refusal to countenance such an eventuality, to make clear what are the consequences if their appeals are not heeded. But what are those consequences? The United States, which continues to arm and provide diplomatic comfort for Israel, has so far refused to say. So we're in a very, very tense game of poker at the moment, which unfortunately inevitably comes at a terrible cost of human suffering, James. That's the thing. Terrible, terrible suffering.
Yeah, and we haven't got time for a further conversation now. Maybe we'll pick this up again when we speak next, Basil. But I'm questioning now whether Western politicians are still talking about a two-state solution. Is that possible now? A lot of the land that's been bombed has been left poisoned. It's questionable whether you can grow crops there. Of course, most of Gaza now has been flattened, so it's not totally whether we can actually have a two-state solution at all isn't even the answer isn't readily available, I think, to that question. So what is going to happen? I'm not sure. I don't know whether you've got the answer either, Basil, but maybe we'll pick that up on our next conversation.
Thank you very much, Basil Valentine.
Yes. Yeah. Right, okay, we're going to take a quick break now. And when we come back, I'm going to have Larry Schwickart on the Freeman Report with me. He's a best-selling author. We're going to be talking all about the demise of the WEF and the WHO and other entities that have been trying to create a one-world government for many decades, or certainly been in the planning. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned with me, James Freeman, on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Jason Allbourne.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allbourne on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, obviously at TNT, we spend an awful lot of time talking about the WHO with its pandemic accord and the WEF and their attempts to add a power grab, a one world government, which is what many people believe they're trying to create. Well, my next guest has written a book about it. It's called A Patriot's History of Globalism. His name is Larry Schwekart. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Larry.
Thanks, James. You know, people talk about the WHO, and I was in a rock band in my early days, and the WHO sat through our set at the Troubadour. So I got to always say, no, this is not that guy. This is the World Health Organization.
Yeah, and you've got a really interesting background, Larry. You got your degree, and then you were in rock bands, weren't you, across the US before going back into academia? Tell us about your interesting history, and of course, you're a best-selling author now.
Yeah, you know, rock and roll is all glamorous, but if you're living it, we were living on $5 a week. I weighed 129 pounds. I strongly recommend if you want to lose weight, try the rock and roll diet. It works every time. But then I went into just almost overnight, I decided I wanted to be a professor. And the best advice I ever got was from my mentor who said, publish or perish. So I just started writing and have been writing ever since. I'd never written anything except song lyrics before that. And then I started writing in 2004. We had a number one New York Times bestseller, Patriot's History of the United States. And then the new book, of course, is A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. Not fall, but decline.
Yeah. Tell us about your first book, first of all, A Patriot's History of the United States, because it is, I mean, you know, you've got, is it 500,000 copies, I think, are in print now? Mm-hmm. You know, it's on the reading list of many, many colleges across the U.S. Tell us about the book.
Well, it's in its 41st printing, which isn't too bad for a 1,000-page history book, right? And we stress what we call the four pillars of American exceptionalism, which no nation has ever had in history before this nation was founded. And that's a Christian, mostly Protestant religious tradition, as opposed to the Church of England. A common law, which we share with the English, which is bottom-up governance. Private property with written titles and deeds, which still in many places of the world doesn't exist, and then a free market economy. And so that allowed America to develop along different lines than many other countries. And when you get back to the WHO, one of the reasons I used to hear during the COVID pandemic, when you look at Australia or Canada and it was locked, they were locked down so tightly, and people would go, aren't they democracies? Yes, they're democracies, but they don't have a 200-year history of bottom-up government. They were governed as dominions from the top down for a very, very long time. So it takes a long time to build up those democracy muscles.
And I guess the first question that springs to mind talking about that, are you worried about the model that America has created at the moment in the direction it's going under the likes of Joe Biden? Are you worried about your country, the land of the free, supposedly?
Well, you know, worried is a word I don't like to use very much. I think our side, meaning conservatives, is a bunch of McClellans. If you know American history, we had a Civil War general named George McClellan, who always outnumbered the Confederates 2 or 3 to 1, yet he was always timid and afraid to go ahead because he always thought he was outnumbered. Of course, I'm concerned about where Biden has taken the country, but I'm very optimistic that's going to end fairly quickly.
So you think Trump's going to get in this year then?
I think he's coming in big time. And when he comes, he better bring 50 mighty men like David had, a Terminex van, and a flamethrower.
And, I mean, what do you think Trump offers America? Because look, a lot of us from this side of the pond will watch Trump in his first term. I do, by the way, hope Trump gets in, because I think one of the things he is or represents is he is a spanner in the works of the globalists. But other than that, I didn't think he, I mean, I think he did quite well on the world stage. But in terms of internally in America, do you think he was a good president?
Oh, yeah. I'd put his first 3 years as up there with any first 3 years of any president in history. Employment soared. Black unemployment fell. Hispanic unemployment fell. He canceled all these hideous globalist agreements, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, pulled us out of the Paris Accord, which is a disaster. We were energy independent. And then COVID hit. And that kind of, as you said, threw a wrench into everything, changed almost everything. And I don't think any president who would have been in during that would have come out looking well, no matter what they did, because it's one of those things where you just couldn't look good.
And what do you think is going on? I mean, we're going to go for a quick break in a minute, and we'll talk about your new book in a moment, because that's really what I want to get stuck into in terms of the conversation we're going to have. But what do you think is behind this very big change in direction for America that we're seeing under Joe Biden? What's going on there? Because some of us are questioning, you know, has corporate America and the White House been captured by China? Is this your own establishment trying to reestablish control over the population? What do you think is going on?
Well, certainly Trump is not of the establishment in any way, shape, or form. There are many people who are afraid that our government has not just been captured by China, but by lobbyists of all sorts, the defense industry, you know, who keep wanting to send more money to Ukraine, things like that. The green industry, which is building all these ridiculous wind farms that are blowing up and having all sorts of problems. But I wouldn't just limit it to Trump. I do want to get back to one thing about him, though. But I wouldn't limit it to Trump. We just saw this week in Portugal more elections moving toward a populist direction. That joins Slovakia, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Italy, Argentina, about a dozen elections about 2 months ago in Europe, where you start to see all of these so-called populist parties exerting power. And it's a rebellion from the grassroots up against this globalist control that's taking place. Now, one thing President Trump has done that's just amazing is that he has caused a radical shift within the Republican Party to blue-collar, working-class Americans of all colors. It's astounding. The New York Times couldn't believe it. They said, Trump's taking all these people of color, all the blue-collar voters who are working class voters. And this is a major revolution inside America. And still many of the people in Washington and the old GOP till Laura Trump got in, they didn't want to admit it.
Yeah. Okay, Larry, we're going to take a quick break now. Don't go anywhere because I want to talk about your new book straight after this break. So make sure you stay with us right here on TNT.
I have some good news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The mainstream press in the West is once again being exposed for twisting the truth to suit the establishment's anti-Trump narrative. The White House says it has not and will not try and talk France or any other NATO country out of sending troops to Ukraine, if that's what they want to do. And US President Joe Biden is reportedly growing anxious and angry about his plummeting popularity and the increasing likelihood that he will be defeated in November's election.
On air
and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, Larry, you've written this new book, A Patriot's History of Globalism. Tell us what the book's about. There you go. That's it. Tell us what the book's about.
Well, I looked at globalism as a historian, and it's nothing new. Globalists tried to establish control over what they thought was the world at the time, which was Europe, after Napoleon was given the boot in 1814 with the Congress of Vienna. They tried again with the Versailles Treaty. This was an effort by diplomats. The first was an effort by monarchists. The next time they tried it was actually with scientists after World War II. People don't realize there were a cabal of scientists who, led by Leo Szilard, who wanted to establish an international body to control atomic energy. But of course, it wouldn't have stayed there. It would have moved on to all sorts of other scientific areas. That failed. They then used Bretton Woods, which has been the most successful of all the globalist programs, to basically govern the finance of the world for about 50, 60 years. That's starting to unravel because Americans are simply tired of footing the bill for a giant army and navy that's interventionist in nature. And then the most recent two, and you and I have lived through these two, what was the COVID medical globalism, where they tried to, through the World Health Organization, lock down the whole world and demand everybody get a vax and a passport. And the most recent is climate change globalism, using all these celebrities. And the good news for everybody is, I show at the end of the book, once again, it's Patriot's History of Globalism, this has failed. They failed every time they tried this, and they're on their heels now. And I don't think that message gets out enough.
And where do you think China fits in to all of this? Because, you know, I often wonder, you know, is this a Western push to get a one world government? And if so, where does China fit into this? We've obviously got the BRICS countries, which are rising at the moment. Could we even see a one world government coming from, not from the West, but actually from the BRICS countries? What are your thoughts, Larry?
Well, yeah, that's a good question on China. I think when this stuff started maybe 20 years ago, in terms of the Davos crowd, I think they were looking at China as being the world's workshop. They were going to put all the manual labor in China and benefit from all that. And Xi decided he wanted no part of that. And so China went from being kind of a tool of the internationalists to being kind of a competitor. There are several people they need to get out of the way in order to have a globalist government, and that is Netanyahu in Israel, Putin in Russia, Xi, and of course Trump. And now they've got a few more little guys like Orban and Javier Milei. You must have loved this. He went to Davos and he read them the riot act, and he was the only big leader who went to Davos. The rest of them kind of stayed away. So you know these guys are in trouble when their motto for their meeting is restoring trust. I guess you didn't have much trust there before you met, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think then that China is, well, from what you've said there, you're saying that the West want rid of Xi Jinping, but how realistic is that? I mean, China is a huge country now. Its armed forces are growing. And like I said, it's kind of like aligned with Russia and a lot of other countries now. Do you think it's too late for that plan to work? Surely.
No, I don't. And you've probably heard this saying before. It's often used with Russia, that China is never as strong as she looks. China is never as weak as she looks. Currently, China has a lot of strengths, but it has a lot of major, major weaknesses. And I not to tout another author here, but Peter Zeihan does a pretty good job of looking at a lot of the geographical and other weaknesses China has. So I don't think China is long-term a concern for world control as it is for trying to get control of American institutions. And we've seen them get big inroads in Hollywood, where they're basically dictating what's coming out of Hollywood in terms of you can't use certain lines. I think I saw a number that there has not been a Chinese villain in a Hollywood movie for the last 15 years.
Right, not even in James Bond, I guess. I mean, that would be the first one that would come to mind, where you'd have a Chinese villain. And in the book, what do you talk about the future and what you expect to happen over the next few years?
I try to look more at current events. I'm a historian, not a prophet, but you see globalism on its heels everywhere, from these popular elections that we talked about to in the U.S. we have had a number of very big court cases, mostly decided by Trump judges, that have started to roll back the deep state, or kind of the globalist state, such as Jarchese versus the SEC, that rolled back the powers of the SEC. You had West Virginia versus the EPA that's rolling back the climate change stuff. And there's a huge one on the horizon that almost everyone thinks is going to go in the direction of less government, smaller government, less global government, and that's the Chevron doctrine. So whether you look at that, whether you look at the lack of interest in Davos, or whether you look at the fact that George Soros pulled out of Europe about a year ago, I wouldn't. That's why the title of the book isn't The Rise and Fall of Globalism, but The Rise and Decline. So far, we have not got them on their heels. Now we need to press the attack.
And finally, I mean, one thing that I kind of question with all of this, obviously, you know, you rightly talked about the COVID era in terms of it, you know, it was a global attempt at takeover. We've got climate change now. If all of these fail, my worry is that the only one left is war. And of course, you know, we've got potential, well, we've got proxy war with a potential to escalate with Russia. There's obviously ongoing talk about what's going on with Taiwan and China. Mm-hmm. Are you worried about that at all?
Yeah, that's a definite concern. Again, I try not to worry, but it's a definite concern. And it's very interesting that today the news was announced that Biden was not going to say anything to the French about their plan to send troops to Ukraine. Of course, they're going to be troops in the back lines, right? And we know how that works, that backline troops pretty soon become frontline troops. But it's interesting that he would say that about France. He can't tell the French what to do, but he's telling Bibi Netanyahu what to do every single day. There are these concerns. The good news is that certainly in America, and I can't speak for England or Australia, but certainly in America, the public is not interested in any more wars. I think the Iraq war pretty much ended all of public support for large foreign interventions. And so that's another reason that Trump is doing so well here, is that he's the only candidate out there, other than maybe J.D. Vance and Rand Paul, saying we don't want foreign wars.
Yeah. And what about Robert F. Kennedy? Do you follow his campaign? Do you think he's got any hope at all?
No. I mean, it's one of those things, like if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, you keep thinking they're going to get the next all-pro wide receiver or something. Kennedy's problem is he cannot get on the ballot in many, many, many big states. States like Arizona and Georgia are very, very hard for independents to get on the ballot. So far, he hasn't been able to totally ally with the Libertarian Party. Polling, moreover, my friend Richard Barris is probably the best pollster in America, and he shows Bobby takes from Joe Biden far more than he takes from Trump, with one exception, and that's a few counties in Pennsylvania, which could be important. But other than that, Bobby is a net drain on Biden.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Larry, thank you for coming on the Freeman Report. Where do people go to? Yes, there it is, that book. Where do people go to buy that? And do you have a website that people can go and find out more about your work?
Sure do. It's Wild, W-I-L-D, wildworldofhistory.com. And we've got special offers of this book and Patriots History of the United States combined. And of course, I'm at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Schweikart, thank you very much, Larry. You'll have to come back on the Freeman Report again soon.
Anytime,
thank you,
James. I love to do it. Love your accent. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Larry. Right, we're going to take a, that's the first time somebody said that on the show. We're going to take a quick break now, but don't go anywhere. Stick with me, James Freeman, on TNT Radio.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With the touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
Robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
Even the thought of dementia can feel scary. It's why we put off getting help, even though we've noticed changes in our thinking or memory. But an early diagnosis can change everything, giving you medical help and a support system around you to help you live better. Start with Dementia Australia's online checklist. Because the sooner you know, the more you can do.
The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, so my next guest, Sophia Loren, she lives in California. We just had a quick chat. I think a lot of people are running away from California at the moment because of all of the things that are going on there. Obviously, you've got a big homelessness problem there, but you've also, it's where a lot of this woke ideology, I think, is ferment in America, and it is doing real damage. And I think, you know, we've had lots of guests on the show here talking about the gender ideology, critical race theory, and all the rest of it. Sophia, welcome to the Freeman Report. Am I putting things in context there? Would you agree with me on California there?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. And second, absolutely. What we're seeing come out of California, it's not just staying here, it's going across the whole nation. Unfortunately, what happens in California happens in the entire nation, and it's not great things coming out of here currently.
Yeah, it is curious, isn't it? We've seen lots of people moving to Florida and Texas over the past 4 years because of the lockdowns and the fact that also there's lower taxes in those places. But tell us, what are you most concerned about with in California at the moment? Obviously, you obviously do a lot of work talking to parents who, from the feedback I get from America, are very, very concerned, lots of parents, about what's going on in schools. You've got the problems in women's sport. What are the big issues for you that you're seeing at the moment?
The major thing I'm seeing happen is the confusion on gender and on sex, which is leading to the erasure and attack of women. So what we're seeing happen in California is it's not just happening to women that are being attacked, it's happening to girls and even leading boys to a place of confusion. So they have passed lots of laws that have allowed for parents to basically lose rights of their children if they don't agree with the lifestyle their child is living, if they're choosing to identify as the opposite gender or one of the 87 different genders California officials tell you there are. We know it's true, there's male and female, and that is it. But it's leading to a whole realm of things. It's leading to, we are seeing in sports here in California, girls are losing out on scholarships. They're losing out on spots on teams. They're being injured because since 2013, California high school sports have allowed for boys to play on girls' sports teams, be in girls' bathrooms, and be in girls' locker rooms. So that's where we're seeing a major issue stem, is girls are being harmed starting at the age of 13, 14 when they enter high school. But unfortunately, this gender ideology is now being pushed in fifth grade. It's being pushed in second grade, all the way down to, we are getting reports from parents, they're taking their kids to their first day of preschool, and there are books in the preschool class about changing your gender, about you can be whatever you want, instead of affirming that that child is male or female and telling them they're beautifully created that way.
And, you know, what we're seeing, I think, in other states, we are seeing a pushback now in certain states. The impression I get is that they tend to be more red states, Republican states, where we're seeing that pushback. We certainly are in the UK here. I don't know whether you're aware, but we've banned puberty blockers for teenagers in the UK in the last week. Are you seeing any pushback at all in California? Because this has been going on for a long time now.
Absolutely, we are. And something that's shocking, we've never seen happen before, is we're actually seeing a lot of pushback for longtime Democrats. A lot of the Democrats are not happy with this. So our California government is not representing what the Democrats in California are really feeling. And so the Republicans are pushing against this. They've been pushing against this, but a lot of the Democrats, their children have been sucked into this gender ideology. And so now they're over it. They're pushing back. And one great thing we've had happen here in California is we are working on a Protect Kids California ballot initiative. And so the ballot initiative would do three things. It would get boys out of girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, and sports teams. It would also make it that anyone under the age of 18 cannot go through these body mutilating and sterilizing surgeries that are stemming from the gender ideology. And then it would just make it that teachers and schools need to keep parents informed about the mental health of their children. And so we have been working on that. We've seen thousands and thousands of people sign that ballot initiative. That way we can get it on the ballot, because we have the statistics that show it's about 70% or a little bit more than that, that if this gets on the ballot, Californians will sign it, because no matter how blue people think we are, they are over the gender ideology.
And when I've spoken to people about certain states in America where this has really taken hold, the one thing they talk about is how big an industry this has become now. So you've got gender clinics all over the place. And of course, there's a lot of money to be made. Plastic surgery surgeons make a huge amount of money from these operations. And of course, you've got all the drugs, the puberty blockers. How much of an industry is it in California?
It is a huge industry in California. We are just seeing, like you said, the money. If you follow the money, you can see why they're pushing this, because once they get a child on those puberty blockers, then getting those surgeries, they have a forever patient. And so they see the money signs. They're not seeing these children as human beings. One of the best examples of this is Chloe Cole. Chloe Cole is a detransitioner here from California. So when she was at the age of 13, she began to transition and try to become a boy. Doctors immediately got her on puberty blockers, and at the age of 15, she had a double mastectomy. So she had both of her healthy breasts cut off. And again, doctors didn't see her as a human being, as a young girl that was going through confusion. They saw her as dollar signs. They saw her as a forever patient. And praise the Lord, she eventually detransitioned. She realized that she wants to hopefully be a mother one day, that she is a woman, and that can't be changed. Yet she is now 19 years old. So again, this double mastectomy was at the age of 15. At 19, it has still not healed correctly. She still has to wrap her chest daily so it doesn't get infected, so it doesn't ooze or bleed. And so that leads back to where we're seeing they get these forever patients. But again, thank God for Chloe Cole. She is pushing back. She is suing Kaiser, which is a huge medical center here, and that's who performed the surgery on her. And so we're hoping some of these lawsuits, we see success in them, and it kind of maybe scares away the doctors that are just looking to get money out of these confused children.
Yeah, I mean, my next question was actually going to be, at the moment, obviously, you've got this statute of limitations, which for a lot of people that have been through this becomes a problem, doesn't it? Because, you know, it really does mess you up going through this process, and it takes a long time to come out of that. And quite often, by the time people come out of that, there's no recourse for them legally against that. What kinds of things are you doing? Because, like I said, I think, you know, the message to parents clearly is quite simple. We should be letting children be children. We shouldn't be confusing them with all of this stuff. But with such a powerful lobby in the background and such a big industry, what are you doing to tackle the industry? I mean, obviously, you talked about court cases there. What else can be done? I mean, are you lobbying for law changes around what teenagers are allowed to do to their bodies?
Yes, absolutely. And so that goes back to the Protect Kids California initiative. What we're working on there is, again, 18 years old. You have to be 18 or older to start going through these body mutilating surgeries. And so that's the best way to protect children. We have the stats that show that 90% of children, if they do not get affirmed in this lie, if they're not affirmed that they're another gender, they actually go back once they kind of get through puberty, they realize and accept who they are. And so it's finding different ways through law, through lawsuits, and just by talking to parents. Recently, I spoke at the Parents Not Partisans Summit. And so again, that goes back to show this really is Democrats and Republicans together fighting against this gender ideology. And it was about 100 different people at that event, different grassroots organizations, all parents that were just simply there to learn how can they push back. And the main thing I taught them was, yes, we're working on the lawsuits. We're here to work with the law. We're here to testify at the Capitol. But as parents, the first thing you need to do is be talking to your children, be informing them about the truth, about reality, and even say the things as a parent you need to say. If your child is disagreeing with you, let them know the truth, because they are being lied to in school through our sex education system. They are being lied to just by their teachers and professors. And even just on social media, you see it on TikTok, you see it on Instagram, you see this whole ideology is being glamorized. You see the different kids that have gone through this and they're posting day 112 on puberty blockers, and I'm so happy. But that's not the reality of what's going on. We're not seeing the day 150 where they recognize they're still depressed, that all the feelings they had before starting these surgeries and puberty blockers haven't changed. And so we're also just trying to inform parents on how they can best communicate with their children when the state of California, when social media, and when their friends and teachers are all lying to them.
And obviously, we're talking about state laws here, because it does vary from state to state. Are you seeing any kind of political debate in this in terms of the federal government and potentially, because this is a big thing, isn't it? And this is devastating for children that get sucked into this. It seems that the state education systems in many states are all affirming this. Is there any debate at all at a national level across the US?
What we're seeing at the national level is less on the puberty blockers and making sure that minors aren't undergoing these surgeries, but more so on the women's sports issue. That's where we're seeing lots of debate. That's where we're seeing Congress is holding lots of different committee hearings talking about the women's sports issue, talking about Title IX that we have in the United States to protect women's sports, to protect women's rights. And so we're seeing that, and we're seeing it actually as a winning topic. We're seeing lots of people are calling in to their Congress member or getting up to the Capitol in Washington, D.C. to make their voices heard. And so while we might not necessarily be winning on the issue of puberty blockers across the nation and at the Capitol in D.C., we are winning on the women's sports issue. And I think that's what we're going to see turn this tide.
And who is it in the states who is actually pushing this? Because, you know, for most of us, I think sensible people, you know, having men compete against women just seems ridiculous. You know, when you look at all the world records in virtually every sport, you can see that men have an advantage over women. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a big secret. So who is actually pushing against and pushing back and promoting men being able to take part in sports? Do you have lobby groups there in the US?
We do have lobby groups, and those are pushing it. When you look back and track the numbers, again, it goes back to the medical clinics. It goes back to Planned Parenthood, who is now performing these puberty blockers. And the reason it goes back to them and they're pushing this ideology is because if we can prove to them that men don't belong in women's sports, just based off of scientific fact, because no matter how many puberty blockers a man takes, no matter how much different estrogen he takes, the surgeries he gets done, males' muscle mass will remain larger than a female's. We know that males' hearts and lungs are larger than a female's, which allows them to bring in air better, which allows them to be faster, which allows all these things that can't change because of puberty blockers and surgery. So if we're able to prove that to them based off of science, which we have all the stats on our side, then they have to recognize that a male can actually never truly become a female. Then they lose their entire storyline. And so they're the ones that are still pushing for men and women's sports. And again, they push for it, the elected officials, all Democrats. The Republicans aren't buying into this, but the Democrats are buying into this. They're pushing this legislation. They're pushing for these laws because they get support from Planned Parenthood, because they get support from these different medical clinics. And so they're not doing a good job actually representing their communities, representing their districts. Again, Democrats are over this, but Democrat elected officials, they're pushing for this so they can continue to get the money they need to run again and to get elected again. So it really is a follow the money situation.
And what are you seeing with the Biden administration itself? Because we all saw the photos from the White House gardens where they had the LGBT days. It wasn't a good look. I must admit, there was all sorts of antics on the White House, which was a little bit inappropriate as far as a lot of us external observers were watching. Is the Biden administration moving back from the gender ideology debate, or are you seeing them still pushing that whole agenda?
They are absolutely still pushing that agenda. But with it being election season, we are mainly seeing them now refocus on abortion and those rights. That's what they're trying to push on. That's what they're trying to get elected on. But they have not backed down on this gender ideology. We just saw headlines, I believe, yesterday and the day before about President Biden, the most Catholic president, invites Catholic priests to the White House. And all these different Catholic priests or different people that are heavily involved in the Catholic religion were posting pictures, grateful to be here, invited by President Biden. But you see the Catholic community as a whole extremely upset because President Biden is not representing them at all and continues to claim to be a Catholic. Yet the Catholics stand hard against this. They stand hard in their religious beliefs that God made a child, male or female, perfectly. And so we are not seeing the president or the Biden administration back down to anyone, to even when Catholics are calling it out. And so they're sticking strong on this, and they're doing all they can to rewrite our Title IX to make sure men can be in women's sports.
Well, listen, Sophia Loren, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report, and good luck with all the great work you're doing. Where can people, very, very quickly, where can people go to find out more about your work?
Yes, go to californiafamily.org. They can find it there. And I have a podcast, This is a Woman podcast, and they can find more there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sophia. Have a great day. And to the rest of you, don't go anywhere. We've got more great shows coming up right here on TNT.